Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Bloggers are in an uproar.
Emotionally, it felt like a kick in the gut. It was also just very puzzling.
They're writing headlines such as Obama picks homophobe.
He has taken positions against women in America, against gays and lesbians in America.
Why so much anger? Warren is against a woman's right to choose and same-sex marriage. Some of those who supported Obama during his campaign say they feel betrayed.
We worked very hard for Senator Obama's election. For us to not be respected by his choices in this case is really very disappointing.
Yeah.
Oh, little girl of mine.
Here goes the left wing complaining about Obama. That's the good news. Good news is he already has trouble with the radical left. Thank God. Who knows? Obama could turn out to be a better president than Bush. He certainly has picked a more conservative cabinet than Bush would have. Imagine if McCain had won, who he would have picked for these cabinet positions. McCain? Huh. Forget about it. Here are some of the headlines on the Savage Nation website, michaelsavage.com, for today. And they're good. I mean, there's no one on the road. No one listening to the show. It's dead. Dead in the water. I really don't know how people do this. They go on vacation and do nothing. I don't understand it, but look, to each his own. If you want to, you know, do that, I guess it's a tradition to do nothing. And people are shopping, but the roads are empty. I bicycled before the show like a ghost town. The only thing that hasn't stopped during the holidays is the moron, idiot schmucks with peace signs in front of their house who burn fireplaces at night in Marin County. Oh, I love them. I love the hypocrites. All the greens. All the environmentalists, all those who believe in global warming are the worst offenders with their smoke. Headline number one, Bush pardons drug dealers, not border agents or a war hero. That's fully explanatory. It says everything. I'll read it again. Bush's pardons came out and he has not pardoned Ramos or Campion, the heroic Border Patrol agents who did their job and wound up in jail for 11 years while the drug dealer they were trying to apprehend went free. He did not pardon Randy Duke Cunningham, a Vietnam War ace, but he did find time to pardon many others, including those who were possession of an unregistered firearm, distribution of cocaine, another gentleman who conspired to harbor and transport illegal aliens, another fine human being who imported and caused to be imported marijuana. Others, very fine Americans, were pardoned, but not Mr. Ramos, Mr. Campion, and of course not Randy Duke Cunningham, which is astounding. You know what Bush's legacy is? Bush's legacy is Bush's legacy. The shoes in Iraq are Bush's legacy. It said it all. You talk about a metaphor? My God. Story number two. Loser of $1.4 billion in Madoff scandal dead in apparent suicide. Who says there's no God in heaven? Well, I don't mean that I know the man personally or that I wish that someone would kill himself, but I've been waiting for someone to jump out of a window. I heard in my youth from my parents that during the Great Depression, millionaires jumped out of the buildings. They committed suicide. And I used to ask why. I couldn't understand why. They'd explain because they had everything, they lost everything, and have to go back to having nothing. They couldn't take it. I decided when I was young that if I ever got anything, I'd still learn how to live with nothing. Or I'd never forget when I had next to nothing and learn how to live with it. And you know what I'm saying? You learn a lot. If you grow up riding on a donkey with a blanket over your back, and then you wind up in a limousine in a private jet, don't ever forget how to ride on a donkey with the blanket on your back. Okay? And don't ever forget you rode the short line bus to Monticello. You're in a Gulfstream 3, wonderful. Remember, you took a short line to Florida with your friends when you were 18 with chicken bones in the aisle, and you loved it. You had more fun in the Greyhound, the short line, and the Greyhound than you did in the Gulfstream. Go figure that out. Speaking of which is the next story. Acorn and Soros linked to Franken vote grab in Minnesota. I'm shocked. A good upstanding American like George Soros, a patriot like him, would try to steal an election for a comedian? Topic number 73,925 for the year from the London Telegraph on michaelsavage.com. Pope says humanity needs saving from homosexuality. Shocking that the Pope believes in the Bible. How dare he offend gays like that? How dare he get offended at the blurring of the distinction between male and female, which he says could lead to the self-destruction of the human race? How dare the Pope remember God's teachings? What kind of man is he? Pope like this, who actually quotes and believes in the Bible. Then going to the other side of the Pope, we go to the devil himself, Jimmy Carter, the Jew hater. Carter laments this. He says, terrorists lack defense against Israel. Jimmy. What do you expect from a guy whose family waved snakes in the air and drank strychnine? He says that Hezbollah, the terrorist organization, lacks missiles to defend itself from Israeli aircraft. That's Jimmy Carter for you. On the right side of the website is Kennedy declines to make financial disclosure. Can you believe this? Yeah, it's a Kennedy. Her uncle is Chappaquiddick Ted. Of course she won't disclose who and what. She won't provide variety of basic data, but she wants to be senator. You hear this? She learned pretty good at her uncle's knee. Let me go down the list. What else do we have? Muslim men found guilty in plot to kill soldiers. Your newspaper said men and left out their names and their pictures. Your newspaper said a federal jury in New Jersey found five men guilty of plotting to kill soldiers at Fort Dix, but didn't show their faces or their names. They want you to think that they were right-wingers who were plotting. Princeton physicist calls warming science mistaken. In 1993, he testified before Congress that scientific data didn't support fears about the ozone hole and global warming. That's in 93. You hear? And he's a Princeton physicist. He's not a hack from the United Nations. Those are some of the stories that I would like to discuss today in the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Or if you'd rather, I read from Love by the Sewer Plant. When pasta was spaghetti. Talk about one-armed Frank's foul breath. Well, we can read along about Tippy dies and is thrown in a garbage truck for all of you who've gotten your over 20,000 copies now of, would you believe this, all on my own? 20,000 copies of Psychological Nudity. That's without a bookstore. That's without Oprah Winfrey. You know, they say that you can't publish a book unless Oprah approves of it. You know what? I wouldn't go on Oprah's show if she invited me on. I don't need her. I don't want her. I don't want Good Morning America. I don't want Good Night America. I don't want any television. I don't want any radio. All I want is my audience. I love my audience. My audience loves me. What more do I need? So those are some of the stories. I'm open for business. The store is open all night. If you got nowhere to go, give me a call at 1-800-449-8255. I'm here for you. Let me have some rock and roll. I'm not ready for a break yet. They're not ready either. They're waiting for me to finish them. Whoa, this is such a... No. It has a certain weakness to it. Don't like that. What am I in the mood for? Not Shabub Shabub. That's a bad one. Frankie Lyman. Give me something strong in the rock and roll variety. Something that will make me think of cars, twin four-barrel carburetors, peeling out rubber. I knew you were going to do that.
Now they often call me Speedo, but my real name is Mister. Now they often call me Speedo, but my real name is Mister.
This is Speedo Savage on the Savage Nation.
Naughty up and call me Speedo, cause I don't believe in wasting time.
Naughty up. There's a piece of saxophone coming up. It's classic. Listen, in a minute. Who's the guy who did it? Why do you hear this horn?
I'm known for pretty women, and I cause them to change their mind.
He's going to go to break any minute now.
Call me
and then I'll go to break.
Yes, man.
Where's the saxophone piece? Raise the volume. Coming up now. Coming up, Mosquito Savage. Until he gets to it, you gotta hook up. Here it is. Oh, good! Who could do this anymore? I want to know if there's one guy left who can play like this. I don't care if this guy is pink, yellow, black, gay, straight, or from the moon. He is good in my book. And I'm going to go to break now.
Savage.
What a wonderful thing America is. What an experiment. The beauty here is that Obama gets elected, and the first thing you find out is that he's a Democrat. He's not pleasing the far left. The gays are upset, as usual. They want everything. The radical women are upset because they thought he'd appoint radical women. The Hispanics are upset. They thought he'd appoint illegal aliens. Everyone's upset with him. It's amazing. It's beautiful. The only people not upset with Obama are the conservatives because they're saying they're better off than with McCain. They're starting to feel it better off with McCain than with McCain. McCain, we knew this guy would have run to the far left. I can guarantee you. You know, that's it. So he's going to create a Works Projects Administration. You know what that is. All roads lead to Rome. You know who's going to get the money. At least the roads will be good. At least there won't be broken roads in America. What do I care if the money goes for roads? Billions and billions of dollars went up the nose of the bankers. They won't even disclose where it went. You telling me this is worse? Bush and his cronies, Paulson, steal hundreds of billions of dollars. They won't disclose where the money went. And you're upset that Obama's going to do a works project. At least something's going to be built for it. At least the road will be paved. You know what I'm saying? So don't tell me it would have been better under McCain. We're screwed one way or the other. But you know, as Aristotle Onassis allegedly said, if you're going to be raped, you may as well enjoy it. And since we're going to be raped by either party, you may as well learn to enjoy it, which is why I love radio. Chicago, Illinois. Sandy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi. I have a question. If you, your parents had you believe in Santa Claus, and if they did you feel bad when they, you know, when you found out it wasn't true?
I did believe in Santa Claus, and I was a little kid. Without playing the Hearts and Flowers thing, we had a little apartment in the Bronx. We were poor. One bedroom. Everyone slept in it. The mother, the father, the three children, and the grandmother all slept in the bedroom, different beds. And there was a little so-called living room. And I wanted Christmas so badly that my mother put up a cardboard fireplace, if you can believe it. It's actually touching. It's heartbreaking. And she hung little stockings on it for Santa to fill. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And then in the morning, you know, whatever money she had, she put candy cane or whatever in it. I believed in Santa. Then we would go to Macy's, Sandy, for Christmas, and there was Santa's there. I never liked them. I didn't like the breath on them. They always had, like, something coming out of their nose. And there were other things I didn't like. I didn't want to sit on Santa's lap. Let me put it to you that way. You can pretty much figure out why. I mean, even as a kid, the other kids, like, were idiots. They'd sit on Santa's lap. I didn't. And when my turn came, I would, like, squirm out of it. My mother would say, "Why don't you want to sit on Santa's lap? Look at the other children. They're sitting on his lap." I said, "No thanks, Ma. There's something about, you know, Santa's clothing that doesn't look right to me, Mom." So, you know, you're asking what happened when I found out there is no Santa?
Mm-hmm.
I discovered girls.
Oh,
thanks for the call. You gotta believe in fantasy. A kid has to have a fantasy. Do you know that? You know, adults need fantasy too. You think you can't live with it? I don't care how pragmatic, or let's say you're one of these people who says, "Oh, you know, I'm a nose to the grindstone. I'm a pragmatist. I'm a realist." I will bet you that you spend a certain portion of your day in fantasy. Whatever it may be, I don't know what that fantasy is. But the thing that distinguishes man, I think, from other animals, although we can't be sure they don't fantasize as well, one of the things that distinguishes us from other animals is certainly the fact that we have a divine soul. That's a given. But in terms of cognitive activities, I would say that man's ability to fantasize is one of his most human attributes. Do you understand that? It doesn't necessarily mean fantasize in the way that you would assume I mean, you know, in that the prurient sense. You can fantasize in any other way. My children will be, I'm fantasizing when I am retired, what you're going to do, you know, that type of thing. But many of us fantasize in the negative. You know, you're afraid of getting sick and old. That's fantasy too. Those are negative fantasies, envisioning yourself sick and old or what it's going to be like dead. Or whatever the negatives may be. Those are fantasies, too. And the trick is to control the negatives and convert them into positives. Very hard to do. The greatest challenge of mankind is to convert the negative fantasies into the positive. I struggle with it every day. But no matter how well I do at night, I have nightmares. So what are you going to do? That's what nightmares are for. You're supposed to have them at night so you don't waste the days. May as well have them at night while you're sleeping. That way, during the day, you don't have to have negative thoughts. Save it for at night so you thrash all night. And you wake up unrefreshed from a bad night's sleep. Oh, did I have nightmares last night? And I know why, too. It was that rotten calamari. Finally, that's it. I'm through with it. I'm through with that animal. I've been reading on the restaurant blogs that people are getting screwed in restaurants now with seafood. It's old. They're complaining that the restaurants are serving it 2-3 days old. Oh, they finally found out they're serving it 2-3 days old. You must be joking. Well, I ate it at home. I had gotten frozen and this and that, defrosted it. It just gave me nightmares. I'm better off pure vegetarian lately. Much better off. Much better off. Rice and beans would be a good diet. But I'm going to – I don't have as bad dreams with no animal product. No animal product, I sleep better. You know which animal gives me the worst nightmares? Lamb. If I eat any kind of lamb at night – oh, I gave that up 15 years ago. Somehow, like, the animal's blood in my – The sinew in my head, the poor animal screaming and crying. But leave me alone with that. I don't want the karma. But if you get down that road, then what can you eat? Even a plant wants to live. You think the apple wanted to be picked? You want to get crazy now? The apricot wanted to be picked off the tree? The wheat wanted to be harvested? I mean, you can go crazy from it all. You can become a Jain from India, J-A-I-N. They walk around waving a fan in front of their face so they don't inhale sentient creatures they can't see like a bug in the air. You hear? You want to become like that? Then go work for Obama. Do the Global Warming Project.
Savage.
One of the greatest saxophone solos I've ever heard. That part of the horn. This is the Cadillacs from 1955 Speedo, Jesse Tex Powell on the horn. Probably on the alto sax. I don't really know. If there's a musician out there, could tell me a little bit more about this particular technique. When they go into that particularly low note. Unbelievable. Louder. Come on, man. Alright, forget about it. I did it enough already. I get obsessive. It's like OCD. And I start wanting to play it over and over again. It's like me with Gene Autry as a kid. I had one, it was like a phonograph. The first one, would you believe that? I mean, I go back to a Royal Portable manual. Can you believe this? Then I go back to a Victrola that I wound up by hand. I don't mean with the big horn. I mean, I'm not that old, you know. I'm not that old a guy. But I swear to God, I had to wind it up by hand. And it had a certain felt on the turntable that I can still smell to this day. And I had Gene Autry till I'm back in the saddle again. I'd play it over and over. Today they take me to a psychiatrist. And the pervert with the medical degree would say, your son plays Gene Autry over and over again. Well, this is classic OCD behavior. We'll have to put him on medication.
I'm back in the saddle.
Why would you have to go on medication if you like a song and play it over and over again? You have a miserable, horrible life, a tragedy all around you, and you hear crying. And so you lose yourself in a phonograph record about bison somewhere away from the Bronx. Why? What do you have to have a medication for that? Doctor, you schmuck, you. Tell me what your children are like. One suicide, probably, and one living in San Francisco.
Where you sleep out every night, and the only law is right.
All right, enough already. That's all. 1-800-449-8255. Bush pardons drug dealers, not border agents or a war hero. Loser of $1.4 billion in Madoff scandal, dead in apparent suicide. Why is Madoff not in jail? Why is he not being remanded to the tombs while awaiting trial? Why is he in an apartment for $9 million? Why? The same reason that our Treasury Secretary can give away $2 trillion to his friends in the business and they don't disclose where the money went. Why? Why? Because you don't live in a democracy anymore. You don't live in one. I mean, I don't know when it died. When did democracy die in America? Can anyone give me the exact year? Houston, Texas. Jason, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, I just wanted to thank you for sharing that wonderful ideal that your mother had. To me, memories are the most important thing in the world, and I'm already on my way to get the cardboard to make a fireplace right now.
Are you serious? You're pulling my leg.
No, sir. That's a wonderful idea. I wish I'd have thought of it.
Well, I'm not making it up. We were poor. We lived in an apartment without a fireplace. She wanted me to have like a nice Christmas Eve. She actually had a cardboard mantle with fake bricks. I don't know how. I think she bought. They did make them. In other words, she didn't paint it. I think they sold them for assemblage in poor people's apartments. And she hung stockings on it.
It's a beautiful act of love. And
it is. She was a great woman. She was a wonderful person. I miss her every day.
Well, thank you very much, Michael.
Well, the guy means it. Would you believe it? In a world that we live in with such cynicism, a guy calls me and actually believes what he just said? How do you like that? You like that? See, people think everyone's cynical and nasty, and they're all from Hollywood. There's a picture of Jesse Powell. Blow Man Blow, Jesse Powell. He did it. When was that album done, Blow Man Blow? Late 50s, Jubilee. They could do a record album like that. He was a cool-looking dude from that era. What happens to people? Every generation changed for the worse. We went from Albert Einstein to Madoff in one generation. The Jews used to have like Yasha Heifetz, Albert Einstein as role models. Now it's Madoff. Can you believe this? Think about what I'm saying to you. We went from Yasha Heifetz, violinist, Albert Einstein, Jonas Salk as role models for Jewish boys and Jewish girls. Now we have Madoff. All in one generation, degeneration of an entire period of time like this. You want to go down race by race and see what happened? I mean, I can do it for you, but I won't dare. You'll take it the right way. I don't want you to take it the right way. But you can reverse it, then do reverse engineering. Take a look at the black musician role models today, the rap stars, so-called, and compare them with the great black musicians of the 50s and even the early 60s. Look what happened there. Let's go to other ethnic groups if you want to see what happened. Show me one that's gone uphill instead of downhill in terms of role model. Now, I don't know whether it's because of the degenerates in the entertainment business or who or what, but the role models for our children in each ethnic group are worse than they were, is what I'm getting at. That's all. So don't misinterpret what I'm saying to you, and don't generalize it in the wrong way just to prove yourself right and me wrong. You know I'm right. That's all. And you know, when I'm right, I'm right. And when I'm wrong, I'm right. So what's the difference? I made a mistake already today. Again, I made a mistake. Yeah, I do my every day you make a mistake. I told you I went on vacation against my will 2 weeks ago, right? And I said I don't want to go on another vacation. What got into me? I don't know. I booked another vacation today for next week. I don't know how I do these things. It's the family, because you want to be with family. So I'm willing to suffer already, you know, with the telephones and the booking and the nervous, the seats. Does it recline enough? And then there's a new site now that you can go on and actually look at your airline seat. I forget, SiteZip or whatever. Everything's on the internet. I actually see the type of seat I'm going to sit in. I picked my airliner, a 767-300, which has semi-reclining seats. But since it's on American Airlines, they suck. And it's in reader comments. It's unbelievable what you can get on the internet today. I knew it was no good with American. They also complain about the crew coming out of San Francisco, the most hostile venal crew in the world, serves San Francisco. Oh, are they miserable. You know what first class is on American Airlines? It means bring a box lunch. You know what economy class is on American? Bring a porta potty. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. Here's the way to do this. It's like, if you know what to expect in advance, you can tolerate almost anything. That's why death is such a problem, is because nobody can tell you exactly what it's like and exactly what to expect and what to pack. So you don't know how to deal with it. That's up to God already. That's where he holds the last card on that one. So it keeps us in line. You know what I'm saying? No one comes back and says, look, here's the thing. Don't bring a toothbrush. It's not going to be any value. Or, you know, do bring your pillow because there's a few thousand years that you wait. You're in the waiting room. You may as well be comfortable. There's no way to know. It disturbs us because we're rational beings. We want answers to every question. But with regard to American Airlines, you can pretty much know what to expect and what not to expect, which is nothing. The way I look at commercial flights today is if it gets me there safely, it's a super 100% success. I expect nothing. I told you last time I flew to Miami. The worst, it's like a deadhead flight. It's a nightmare. SFO to MIA, the worst flight in America. It's all of the special characters from Polk Street and the Castro District going to South Beach for the holidays. And, oh, my God, and they all worked those flights. Arrogance, hostility. You don't ask for water at the risk of being taped. You ask for water too strongly, they call out the tape squad. They have the MIA police waiting for you. You bring a box lunch, even first class. Because the last time I went, you know, you upgrade, it's in first class, whatever, first class. No such thing in commercial airlines, first class. So I go there, I sit in the last row. I'm waiting for lunch. She says to me, sorry, there's no lunch in the last row. What? We have only a sandwich. I said, what are you talking about? She said, well, we serve from the front to the rear going east. I said, how would I have known that? She said, I'm sorry, sir. That's the way we do it. All right, give me this peanut butter sandwich. Coming back, I figured, all right, it's not going to happen to me. I sit in the first row. I get booked the first. Coming back, the same thing. She starts in the back. By the time she gets to me, she only has a sandwich. I said, what are you doing? I'm starving. I'm sorry, sir. Going west, we start serving from the rear going forward. There's only a peanut butter sandwich left. I swear to God, I'm not making this up. So I've learned, you always go to an airport full. You eat at home, and then you eat at the airport, and then you buy a lunch on top of it all. That's because you're getting nothing, no matter what class of service you're in an American. Then you're free. What, I need the linen? I need the fork to feel rich? I don't need any of it. Just leave me alone, okay? I don't even ask you for a drink, because you know it's going to be subpar. Whatever you ask them for, they're doing you a favor. The wine you could puke from, it's cheaper than a wine in a San Francisco restaurant by the glass. I don't have to tell you what that is. They're cutting it from 3 ounces now to like 2 1/4. $22 a glass of wine. I swear to God, they rip you off now. I swear to you. Take a look at single glass wine prices in restaurants in San Francisco, ranging from $9 for 3 ounces, which they give you 2 1/4, all the way up to $22 a glass. Some people have the nerve. You talk about robbery. I've never seen anything like this. How they get away with it, I don't know. But anyway, that's the story. So you don't need to drink. You know, do what your mother said. Take Librium better. In my mother's day, you know what the tranquilizer was in those days for women who were nervous? Was Librium in those days. Miltown and Librium. They were the tranks of the day. 2 milligrams of Miltown with a little rosé wine after class was pretty good, I got to tell you. Woo. All kids expire. They go in their mothers, you know, they get home. What are you studying? I'm studying comparative anatomy. Don't bother me. I'm in the bedroom with a disarticulated skull. My skull is disarticulated from your Milltown, man, and a glass of wine. Oh, I'm glad you're studying anatomy in there. Very nice. What are you going to be one day? I don't know. Maybe a mass murderer. But just don't open the door with every parent's fear, you know. But they used Milltown, Librium in those days. Then they got much stronger tranquilizers. Like 2 milligrams of Milltown, you don't even feel. Takes the edge off a bad marriage. That's why the doctors prescribed it in the 50s. How do you think your mother and father stayed together so long? They were stoned all the time. You think they would have lasted that long without medication? No, my father wouldn't touch a thing. He was stoic. Nothing. Didn't believe in anything. He had like a drink on holidays. I don't know how these guys did it. You talk about getting through life cold, white knuckle. The guy drank on holidays. That was it. Anyone who drank other than on a holiday was a drunk to him. He died at 50-something. Okay. I mean, you know, it probably would have been better if he knocked down a few drinks every night. What do I know? What I studied, definitely. Two, small amount every night. 2 to 3, 2 to 3, 4, whatever. There used to be a discussion of what moderate drinking meant. It was cultural. It was a cultural thing. In America, moderate drinking meant one drink a night. That's so old maidish, you know. What do you mean moderate? Why even bother? One drink a night. I'll have my, just like an old age home, I'll have my drink, I sit shaking with your drink. The British medical establishment was like cool on that. Moderate meant 1 to 5 ounces of alcohol a night. That I like. They probably modified it already too since the arrival of their friends from the Middle East. 1 to 5 was good when I was a couple of years ago. I could do 1 to 5. Now if I do 1 to 5, I wind up doing 1 to 5 if I drive. I'll be right back. Savage.
Of a white Christmas.
I don't know, this is what I'd like to hear in a mall instead of rap music. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I go to an ice skating rink, I want to see people ice skating to this, not ice skating to some horrible, horrible, horrible nightclub music. But you can't even get White Christmas anymore. I'm afraid to look into Bing Crosby's background. When I hear Bing Crosby, I think guy in a cardigan, nice family man. You know, but I'm afraid to look. What they've deconstructed everybody, turned everybody into a monster to make you hate your own society. These sickos in the media, why do they do this to everybody? Everybody's no good to them except them. They're good. What about the deconstructors? Let's look into their lives. Why don't we force people to deconstruct all of our Western civilization heroes to disclose their names and their wonderful lives? All these people sitting in pajamas somewhere in a madhouse. All these bloggers. You know, they're making everybody's imperfect but them. Bing Crosby will read somewhere. Now you think, beat his children. Bob Hope, probably going to find it. Cross-dresser. Everybody I like. Even Jack Benny will turn out was a sicko. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to know the other side of them. Leave me alone. Let me have an image. Everybody was somebody else. I saw a movie. I love this movie. I was on vacation. I took it with, Black and White, Kirk Douglas, Lana Turner, 1952, incredible movie. But within the movie, I guess I can't remember the title, so I'm groping for time. It's about a Hollywood villain, a guy, young guy, who's a producer. And his father was a famous movie lot owner. And he plays this guy on the make who is vicious to everybody, uses everybody with his charm. And he seduces Lana Turner, who's an alcoholic daughter of a dead movie star, into acting for him. He gives her a comeback and they love her, the film test, blah, blah, blah. And she won't perform because she's a drunk. And he makes her think he loves her for the 6 weeks that they're shooting the movie. And she's in love. The woman comes alive, you know. And she does a great part. Anyway, right after the last scene is cut for the movie within a movie, she goes home and she's dying to be with Kirk Douglas, who she's in love with. And she comes home and he's with another woman and she falls apart. She goes to pieces. The interlock, the dialogue between her and him at that moment, and he snaps at her, the bad and the beautiful. And he says to her, what did you lose out of the deal? So I'm no good. So I'm with somebody else. We had 6 good weeks. Look at you. You're famous now. Don't complain to me. If you don't like it, it's Ilona, one of those. What a great movie. But within the DVD of this movie, there is a, you know, I love these DVDs. They're like, Lana Turner from a daughter's point of view. I couldn't believe this piece within the piece. It's from Lana Turner's daughter, who was like a crazy mixed up kid. This is an amazing story. I was captivated by it. It was the second good moment in Cancun when I didn't know what to do already. I was watching this. The only good moment was the Blago scandal. Then at night I had nothing to do. There was not one good movie. You ever watch Mexican television? Oh my God. You could throw yourself out of an 8th floor window. But it's the story of Lana Turner as told by her daughter. The daughter, it turns out, was mixed up alcohol, drugs, lesbian at 18, you know, because the girl was totally abandoned by her mother, raised by nannies. Then Lana Turner lost her money, blah, 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 blah. So Lana Turner in the early 50s is dating Johnny Stampinato, like the big gee gangster from L.A., good-looking Italian guy, tough as nails, and the real McCoy, not one of the faker type. So Lana Turner's dating Johnny Stampinato. According to the daughter hears yelling, she's doing her homework, blah, 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 and she hears yelling and screaming upstairs from the bedroom. So as she tells it, she picks up a kitchen knife, the daughter, right? Like, kitchen knives in those days were frightening. No wonder half the guys in New York became gay, and the mothers had kitchen knives, you know, scared. So she picks up a kitchen knife. They don't even make them that long anymore. Even in Germany, they don't make them like that. Like samurai swords that the women had in New York in those days. 12-inch knife. Picks up a kitchen knife, goes upstairs, opens the bedroom door. Johnny Stompanato is leaving the bedroom, allegedly, and he walks into her knife. She gutted him. She gutted this gangster, a kid, 17 years old. So the scene is she's tried for murder. The mother, Lana Turner, goes on the stand, and they claim she gave the greatest performance of her life because she gets the daughter off. Why? I mean, the story is unbelievable. The story within a story was astounding. You got to see this thing. Anyway, the movie itself, The Bad and the Beautiful, I highly recommend if you're into like really intelligent. See, they wrote really intelligent dialogue. It's I tried to get the young people they're intelligent young people. Don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking them in any way, but it doesn't translate into the generation. They didn't dig it. I mean, they watched it for me, you know, like, oh, he wants to watch. He's a smart guy. I saw already within 12 minutes they were, like, playing cards on the plane. Everybody went to the front of the plane. They were just playing cards. I was in the back with, the movie. All right, turned it off. Even I went to sleep. But the point is that if you're over, I don't know, 35 and you're into, like, you know, movies that read like novels, blah, 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 Bad and the Beautiful. But he was a great actor, Kirk Douglas. How about now, like, after the stroke? Terrible. I mean, I don't know if that happened to me. I would never go on the radio. I try to envision that. If I had a stroke, God forbid, would I still do radio? The reason that I'm still on the radio, although God tried to strike me down, is because I believe that the savage nation... I wouldn't do it. There's no way in the world, if God forbid that happened to me, I would stay on the radio. I'm not mocking anyone with a stroke. It's a terrible thing. It happened to my family, but I wouldn't stay in the media. There's people with a willpower or an egomania I'll never understand. Why in the world would I stay in the media? It's horrible to see a guy with swashbuckling. Oh, man, you were Spartacus. I don't want to see Spartacus now dribbling on your show. It's terrible. It happened. That's it. I'm sorry. Keep it to yourself. I want to get even more particular with you. My father was a very strong man. After he had a heart attack, I lost all respect for him. Would you believe it? I come from a very tough family in that regard. I don't mean tough like we're bulletproof, but mentally like Iron Man. I didn't want to know him after he got sick. Would you believe this?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Texas study focuses on health care costs, but a new report in Colorado combines health care, education, and prison costs. It puts the total cost to taxpayers in that state at more than $1 billion. The Colorado report was produced by the Federation of Americans for Immigration Reform, or FAIR, which favors enforcement of immigration law and reduced levels of immigration.
You know, they faced life in prison, and I have to tell you, they were now, you know, charged with conspiracy to kill military personnel, possession of machine guns, possession of weapons by illegal immigrants, and that charge, conspiracy to kill military personnel, which they were found guilty of, carries a life in prison sentence.
Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this, Mama said.
Well, here we are in the Savage Nation. Welcome to the second hour of the program today. Many of you joining us for the first hour. We have covered quite a bit thus far. And those two openings were about, one, the Fort Dix Five, the Muslim jihadists who were found guilty, thank God, because they conspired to kill soldiers. I mean, there's no defending them, is there? Anyone out there want to defend them? Number two, the other story about the high cost of illegal immigration. I've tried to tell you that with the bankruptcies in America today, the day has come for them to go home. We cannot afford amnesty. let alone medication and education. And the states are going to have to get straight here. They cannot continue to supply the illegals with unlimited medical care and such. But we have such phonies in the governorships that I doubt very much that they'll do the people's business, as witness what they're doing with the bailouts of bankers who won't even disclose what they're doing with their money. So I don't want to worry about it right now. In the last hour, I touched on many topics that I thought were really great. Improvisational pieces in the last hour were really good. I got to tell you, I know what's good and I know what's bad. I know when I'm good and I know when I'm, you know, it's like when he knows when you've been happy, he knows when you're sad, blah, blah, blah. I hit some high notes in the last hour. I did a piece on deconstructing icons of the 50s and 60s. I thought that was amazing. I did a thing on tranquilizers in the 1950s. That was amazing. And what was another one I did? Guys, I did another one. You saved it. You said whatever. You got to tell me. I'm groping. But we can go now. They don't know any. They weren't there. Let's go to the call. Oh, also the saxophone piece. Let me hear the saxophone piece so we'll get them up to speed. My favorite saxophone piece in the world. That you can find, right? That you can dig up. I see. There's a short lead up. Not the whole thing. It's 10 seconds. There you go. God, this guy was amazing. I can remember when I first heard this. Out of my ethnic background, it was so good. The saxophone was so good it broke my genealogical chain. Oh, I fell in love with jazz because of this music. I got news for you. My father was not a religious man. He was a total atheist, didn't believe in God. I got to tell you right now, I mean, my mother was a God-believing woman. She's the one who gave me the spark. My father was not. He was from Russia. He wasn't a communist, but he didn't believe in anything, truthfully. He was cynic about politics, cynic about religion. He wasn't one or the other. He was just a practical guy. He did read five newspapers every night. I said, what are you reading five papers for? He said, I get all opinions from... He's this paper, the Post is liberal, that paper, the Journal was conservative, was right-wing. I don't know. He read them all. Then he decided what he wanted to believe was true. See, that's how you should be. That's how you should be, open-minded instead of a closed-minded left-wing nut, as most of you are. But the point I'm making is the music. So I listened to the jazz music, and I started bringing home Nat Cannonball Adderley, I remember, and I'd play it in the house. Then he'd come home. What are you listening to that junky music for? Turn it off. What junky music? I like the music. Turn it off. No junky music in my house. He didn't want to hear it. Then eventually he started to like it. That's what happened. I'd catch him listening to like Ray Charles in the car. I think that's when he told me after that you can't have music in the car because I'm liable to hear what he liked, which was the same music I liked. You know, fathers and sons have their shtick. I miss them all. Holiday time. You know, holiday time is another story. But I told you that we were very, very, very strong-willed people. Like mountain, European mountain people who like learned stoicism over 700 years of deprivation, learned to live on next to nothing. Just eat like, I don't know what they ate, the ancestors in the old country. No wonder they wanted, but they did. They lived long and they didn't want to live long, but they did. Now I want to live long and I can't because of the, you know, it's a paradox. You have everything and you want to live long, but you can't because you're living too high on this food scale. They lived on kasha, which is like a grain, unseasoned grain. And there's no animal product, because if they killed the animal, they lost milk and cheese. So they had no animal product, maybe once in a while for a holiday. That's why they lived long. They lived grim, horrible lives with mud, like a bad Tolstoy, a bad piece of a Dostoevsky novel. A muddy village with a wagon wheel getting caught in the rut. Horrible. I heard in the old country, I swear, I only learned this recently. I never looked into it. They lived in one room with, like, smoke coming out of the chimney. And the grandparents, they slept up near the fireplace. Like, they had an open hearth that covered the entire room in the middle, because that projected warmth. And the grandparents, they rigged up like a bunk bed right next to the fireplace because they would have died from the cold. That's why I have trouble with heat to this day. I myself prefer the cold. But can I admit to you something I did recently? Am I allowed to admit this on the show? I try always to be stoic to this day, but it doesn't work eventually. Somebody bought me a heating thing that goes under the, not a heating pad, a heating sheet that goes under because I don't put heat on at night, okay? I hate the heat. I'm stuffy. I sleep with the window open, you know, the door, and it gets like 39, 40, 30. It's getting very cold here. And it's damp in Northern California. I hate the damp, but on the other hand, I don't like the heat. So I'm sleeping with the window open with no heat. It's a toss-up. I said, why don't you try a heating sheet? So I get a heating sheet. I put it on, I got sissies. I'm not that good. I put it in the bed. I can't believe it. The aches in my bone in my hand went away from one night in the heating thing. And like a head cold cleared up. Would you believe it? There's a lot to be said for modern conveyances. I got to tell you, next I'm going to try central heating in the house. I may move up to some other modern. No, I'm serious. I tend to be a little too hard on myself. Maybe if I was much easier on myself, I'd be a nicer guy on the radio. And then maybe I would, wouldn't be boycotted anymore. You know, I'd learn to love illegal immigrants who suck the society dry like leeches. I'd learn to love the people of Popates. Okay, Yakima, Washington. Dan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, that the saxophone you're talking about, that's a tenor sax.
Right, tenor, not alto sax.
No,
tenor.
I play the alto. That's a little higher. It sings more. But
when they go into that deep, when it goes into the countertone, that's a tenor sax going into what?
Into the lower register of its, there's a octave key. He presses that when he wants to be in the higher register, and when he wants to go to that low note you're referring to, he
yes.
lets go of that, and he goes down, he closes his pads, and he goes to the key that he's after, and he can go low if he closes to the note he wants.
But Dan, that was a very 50s thing, that counter low note, wasn't it? I don't hear that done anymore. Does anyone do that anymore?
Yeah, it's done if you need that note. You just go to it, and they do it on the end of the tunes.
But this guy, Beowulf, who was he, Tex? What was his name? Jesse Tex Powell. Was he a famous sax player, Dan?
Jerry Mulligan was the great baritone sax player.
Oh, I love Jerry Mulligan. You were bringing back memories now.
Kenny,
We had a Dumont television with a great speaker in it. I used to lie in a living room floor in the few hours I had to myself, and I'd listen to a certain jazz show on Saturday mornings for hours, and I'd listen to that sound coming out of that speaker. It was all Jerry Mulligan. It was a great era for jazz.
Baritone sax.
Baritone sax, my God. I always wanted to play that instrument, Dan. I have no facility with music. Would you believe it?
Well, Kenny,
either people do or they don't. I can't play an instrument.
G plays the soprano.
Who
See,
does?
There's about five saxophones. They're named after Adolf Sax, the Belgian. He was from Belgium. His name was Adolf Sax.
Do you think I could still learn the saxophone at my age, take up something like, huh? Any age you can learn?
Yes, it's simple.
Which one should I use to start? Which one of them?
I like the alto.
That's the smaller one?
It's the higher of the tenor.
Okay, and then if I do that, then I can move up and get one where I can do a note like that?
You can play all of them. If you can play one, you can play them. They're all fingered the same. It's the size of the horn that makes the difference of the range.
Isn't that something? Well, I appreciate this call, Dan. I'm going to send you a copy of my book, Psychological Nudity, for being so informative. I don't know. People say you should do what you wanted to do when you were young and you didn't get a chance, or you tried it and put it down for whatever things came along. In that light, there's so many things I'd like to try. I mean, but who's going to try it all? Maybe the saxophone could be one of them. That I could try. That I could definitely try. That's a manly instrument, not the flute. Remember, I tried the flute. My father caught me in the basement playing the flute. Did I ever tell you that story? Oh, my God. I went through a phase in college. I got a flute I want because I like Cuban music. And I particularly like the wooden flute that Jose Fajardo played. It was astounding to me. Papacheco, Jose Fajardo. There was the Cuban flute. Nobody was as good as them. They would go off on these reveries in the flute that were astounding to me. I remember going to a nightclub in New York called the Palladium, and I'd stand and listen to the flute players in particular. And once I asked Jose Fajardo, I think actually I was in Miami, God knows, years later. I went up to him. I thought he was God. You know how you look up to a musician. They're just people, you know. So I said, oh, Mr. Fajardo, how do you get your inspiration to come up with these particular improvisations? And he says to me, I don't know, he was pulling my leg. He said, I have a lot of birds and I listen to the birdies sing. I don't know if he was kidding me or what. He probably was telling me the truth because I listen to birds sometimes and I imitate bird sounds. I whistle to them. I'm very good at it. There's another side of me you don't know, a little crazy, I know, to listen to birds and go, my dog loves it too, but if I'm out in the woods walking my dog and I hear a bird singing, I can mimic the sound very closely. The dog looks at me and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I don't know. Maybe I should take up the saxophone. That might be something to do with my spare time. It might be a nice thing. Anyway, that's one thing. Earlier, am I running late? I got to go back to one thing I touched on earlier. I was talking about Milltown, which is a form of mild safe tranquilizer from the 50s that a lot of housewives were given. And this class of your drug, I want to talk about it for a minute. I have a very small background in pharmacology. I once thought I would become a doctorate of pharmacology, but I didn't go down that road. I went in another sphere. But today everyone uses, let's say, the Valium class, the benzodiazepines, and they're very powerful, and they really do work. However, they're quite addictive. In the 50s, very small dosages of meprobamate, which were marketed under the brand name Milltown, Equinil, etc., were given out. And a lot of housewives were using these minor tranquilizers. I think they should be bringing them back. They rapidly became bestsellers. They were known in the media as happy pills. It's a very interesting differential between meprobamate, that class of tranquilizers, because if you look at them chemically, the meprobamate, Milltown type of tranquilizer, was an open chain molecule. You look at the benzodiazepine, they're closed chains, and it's a very big difference in terms of the body's ability to get rid of the side effect, the byproducts of these particular drugs. I just think they should be looked at again. There's nothing wrong with somebody who's a very nervous, agitated person. But the fact of the matter is, in an early study of patients, they found that meprobamate alleviated mental systems in many people. Self-destructive patients became cooperative and calmer and experienced a resumption of logical thinking. I would recommend that we should give this class of tranquilizer to everybody in Congress, because if they could become calmer and stop being so self-destructive towards America, and they could resume logical thinking, I think we should definitely send meprobamate to all members of the House of Representatives. I'll be right back.
Savage.
This is Dizzy Gillespie, Night in Tunisia, one of the great jazz pieces of all time. Between 1946 and 1949. This is a guy who was a pioneer. If you understand what bop education means or bop music, just feel it. Anyway, I'm not a music guy, but it's Cubano pop. Well, stop for a minute. Go back to the opening. Just for a minute. Hold on. Now, imagine if you're a kid from a very ordinary background and never heard real jazz music, and suddenly you hear this clarion call, this coming out of nowhere, out of the nights of New York. One night you're driving late, coming over the 59th Street Bridge, and the Silver Cup Bread Factory is still making bread. Can you imagine? Not movies. And the smoke's coming out of this chimney, 3 a.m, and you hear this. And then there's Symphony Sid playing this with his great cigarette voice. And he's telling you it's Dizzy Gillespie, Night in Tunisia. And that's Dizzy Gillespie on vocals and trumpet, James Moody on the tenor saxophone, Cecil Payne the baritone sax. That's John Lewis on the piano, Milt Jackson on the vibraphone, Ray Brown on the upright bass, and Chano Pazzo on the congas and bongos. I mean, it changes your whole life. There are moments that move you into another sphere, breaks your genealogical chain, I gotta tell you. Whatever, turn it off. Nobody got them. Talking to myself. Oh, Manteca is actually better on this album. You don't have that, do you? Have Manteca? No. All right, forget it. I'm already asking for too much. Do you have anything with Pacheco playing the? No, we looked for that. Any old Cuban music? Sacramento, Gail. Welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael. I love you. I love you. I've loved you for the 9 years I've listened.
Oh, isn't that nice? Somebody appreciates me.
Me laugh today. Talking about the airplane, talking about I don't want to, but I booked the vacation, da 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 da. And every time you talk about food, I listen. And today, I'm getting ready to make cioppino for our Christmas Eve.
Oh, you're actually going to cook it yourself, so you're not going to charge your guests $22 for a glass of 2 ounces of wine in San Francisco in restaurants?
Everybody gets
$22 for 3 ounces of wine or 2 1/4 if they get away with it. That's all.
Savage.
Caserita villareña.
You talk about music that I first love. Here's Orquesta Aragon. Orquesta Aragon de Cuba. You say, well, why would I like it? Who wouldn't like it if you love music? Listen to how lyrical it is. They were big. I mean, 16-piece orchestra, and they were all top of the scale Cuban musicians at the time. They didn't put in any electric guitars like some of the people are doing today, which I think has totally destroyed the music, incidentally, if you listen to any of this music. Anyway, forget it. I'm just, you know, since it's the holidays, I'm drifting off a little bit. Since we're doing between rating periods, I can do what I want. Since no one's listening, 8 to 10 million people, maybe there's 4 million this week, like dribbling to zero tomorrow when everyone cooks and whatever. You do what you got to do. And so we're just talking about music. So picture this, you know. Picture this, what this would do to a kid who doesn't understand music. But the best thing Aragon ever did was Pate Cochero, particularly the second piece, which we're getting for you. And then when we play it on the show, the guys are downloading it. I'm going to give you something about me, the era, the Jaguar, the top down, racing the car in the snow through Central Park, almost skidding and getting killed. I mean, the kids do crazy things and they live through it. They don't. I can still remember to this day racing the Jaguar with the top down in a snowstorm. Yeah, the snowstorm had just started, and it was light, maybe an inch, playing this music late at night, racing through Central Park. I mean, come on, these are great times. Yeah, kids do these things. Today you can't get away with it, that's all. Everybody wants me now to scream and yell at Obama. I'm not going to do it, not right now. I'm not in the mood. People want me to, like, just beat up to the libs. It's for another time. Right now I just want to drift. Kansas City, Tyler, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I agree with your previous caller as a saxophone player that was a tenor saxophone. The actual technical term for the way that he's playing down low in that register is called rot gut, R-O-T-G-U-T.
And
really? It sounds just like it feels. When you get down to that lower register, your knees bend, your back bends, and it's a beautiful thing.
Now, is that technique still popular at all in the music world?
You have to look for it, but you can find. I mean, you can find your local neighborhood, blues bars and whatnot. It's still happening out there, my friend.
I notice you're calling me from Kansas City, okay? Which is still one of the great jazz centers in America, isn't that true?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. 18th and Vine.
Isn't that amazing? You know, it's funny. I remember to this day, I was once a representative for a textbook company way back. Soon after college, after I was a teacher or whatever, and I had to travel the country. And one of my greatest memories is I went to do a presentation in St. Louis, Missouri. And I asked where the music was at the end of the dinner, you know, young corporate kid. And they said, well, it's across the river in East St. Louis. I mean, I went across the river. I never heard music. To this day, it stays with me what went on in that nightclub, the way the guys would come in, would beat up music cases, like they just walked in off the street, ordinary looking guys, and they take out an old beat up instrument, and it became magic in that nightclub. I still remember it to this day.
Yeah, doctors, that they were just out on the street playing busker. They were buskers, my friend.
What is that known as?
Busker is someone who just plays on the street for the pleasure of the people, plays for the art, plays for the heart.
Are you a musician, Tyler? You do this?
Yes, sir. I'm a saxophone player. I dabbled in classical guitar for years, but primarily a saxophone player, sir.
What motivates a museum? What motivates a musician? Other than you're playing, obviously, for the music. There's no other reason.
Well, I'll tell you what. The way I learned to play was my father put me in a corner so that I could get the resonance back into from the corner. Back into my ears. We didn't have money. We didn't have a studio to go to, anything like that. I play for the sound. As you can tell, I'm getting worked up about it. I love the music. I love the sound. I play for the sound, and then the effect that it gives people the way that it makes people feel is the result.
Oh, you mean when you're playing it in a club and you see what it does to the audience?
Yes, sir. Yes, that's just the result.
See, that's what I miss in radio. You know, by what I do, like in the last hour, I did some pieces that would have been great nightclub pieces. You can feel it. I would have loved to be in a club with 100 people and see their reaction to that. You can't get it out of radio. You're alone in a room, basically.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, you play for the sound. You play for how it feels coming out. Yeah.
Well, that's what I do in this business. So help me God, what motivates me? The effect on the people. The effect on the people. I can motivate them to start thinking. I can motivate them to start acting. Unfortunately, it didn't have much of an effect on this election, other than John McCain didn't win, which is almost, in a way, thank God. Do you see the latest headline that just came up on Drudge? Did you see the latest headline? President-elect Obama interviewed by prosecutors. Finally, they're tracing it up the chain of the Blagojevich thing. I mean, look, the fact of the matter is, there's no question in my mind that Obama had something to do with this, and I don't think it's going to go anywhere. And frankly, I don't think the country could take it. I don't think the country could. Let me send Tyler a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Right now, I have a rare treat for you, which is Orquesta Aragon with one of their great, great pieces called Pare Cochero. Listen to this. It's not yet. Just give me a few minutes. I do so much for you. Bear with me. I know you want to hear me blast Obama. I'm not going to do it right now. Wait till he gets to this point. Guest out of going to Cuba, blah, blah, blah. Just bear with me. Listen to this. Pare. Hey! Hey! Now, when you're trapped doing advanced algebra, physiology, anatomy, whatever you're doing, philosophy, and you can get off on this music, you're a lucky person. What is the point of music? It's supposed to lift you out of the ordinary, isn't it? Like any other art. See, whatever. All right, now I'm talking to myself. I'm going to do politics now. No, Blago didn't talk to Obama. How could you not believe that? What, do you believe in Santa Claus? Of course he talked to him about it. I mean, the guy was the governor of the state. The guy took his seat in Congress. Of course they talked. Of course Rahm Emanuel was involved. What's the mystery here? How do you think American politics works? You want me to lay it on long? I'm going to give you a shocker right now. I'll give you a shocker. It would be a disaster for America if the prosecutor got overzealous and tried to destroy Obama right now. How do you like that? It would be a disaster. It'd be the worst thing this country could experience. Are you people? You see, you don't even understand the ramifications of this. What could benefit the country to bring Obama to his knees right now? Tell me the benefit to such a situation. We're in a depression. They're printing money. They've tripled the national debt. The country is flooded with illegal immigrants and sleeper cells. What would the benefit be to destroy Obama's presidency before he begins? There would be no advantage to it, especially when you look at his cabinet. The guy appointed a rather moderate cabinet. In fact, it's more conservative than that moron McCain would have appointed, as far as I could tell. Moron McCain would have gone so far to the left to pander to the NBC, CBS, ABC, CNN, and Fox that it would have been more liberal than this cabinet. I bet, you know, they really ought to leave this alone. You want to go high up on the food chain, then go after Rahm Emanuel. And then you better be ready for a chief of staff that's going to be so far to the left that it'll make Rahm Emanuel look like a right winger. You know, you got to watch out where this goes. Got to watch out where this goes. See, this guy Blago, there's no question in my mind he's a psycho. I watched him the other day when he came out and said, I will fight, I will fight, I will fight. This guy's crazy. I mean, it's one thing to have done it. It's another thing to have gotten caught on tape. And then it's a third thing to not listen to your lawyers and get up there and think you're so charming that you can charm the pants off America by saying you're going to fight and your mother told you to read If on the air. I mean, they must be listening to my show because I'm the only one in the media who's read If over the last 10 years. Nobody in the media has read Rudyard Kipling's If. So there's no question in my mind that the guy loves the show. I mean, I don't blame him, but I think he's a little buggy. to have gone out there and done that. The best thing for this guy is to work out the best deal he can, get some kind of great appointment and some sports commission making $400,000 a year, and, you know, do a deal with everybody and get off the stage. Because this is not good for his state. It's not good for America. But I'm a pragmatist at the end of the day. Do you understand this? Puchero, pare, pare, cuchero. Obama's Christmas Eve blago. See Obama with his shirt off. He's in good shape. They show him now compared to him. But Putin's much better, stronger, wider, much tougher because he does karate. I mean, I'd like to see so Putin and Michelle Obama would be quite a fight. She's tough. Woof. I don't care how much he works out. That woman could wipe the floor with him. One look and this guy's going to do it. We haven't heard from her recently. She's the secret power behind the throne. Behind every great man, there is a woman telling him he's nothing. I heard that many years ago. Oh, that turned out to be true. Behind, you remember that joke? Behind every great man, there is a woman, and some wise guy added, telling him he's nothing. You know? Well, forget about it. Look what's going on with snow. They're turning that into like a big story. It's snowing in December in the East Coast. It's supposed to snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. The biggest story is Kennedy declines to make financial disclosures. Wow. And you know, the heartbreak is George Bush. He can give you a heart attack. This guy gets worse by the day. If you go on to michaelsavage.com, we linked up his pardons. I haven't done much politics today, I'll admit. I'm just drifting off and having a great time. Bush pardons drug dealers, but not the border agents and not the war hero, Randy Duke Cunningham. Why does he do this? What is wrong with George Bush? Why can't he pardon the two Border Patrol agents? 100 people signed the list, meaning congressmen and senators. I said, they got 9 years. What are you doing? They're only doing their job, Bush. What are you doing to them? Ramos and Campion should be pardoned. Randy Duke Cunningham has served around 5-6 years. Pardon them, Bush. Why are you pardoning drug dealers and not them? George Bush is not only screwing up his legacy, he's breaking people's hearts across America. The guy is a total washout, a wipeout. I've never seen a bad guy like this in my life. Never. Loser of $1.4 billion Madoff scandal, dead in the parent suicide. All right. Happens. 1929, they threw themselves out of buildings. Hedge fund founder who lost $1.4 billion in scandal, dead in the parent suicide. René Thierry Magon de la Villa Huache did it. You can make a lot of jokes about it. It was like a Frenchman with an aristocratic, you know, pedigree. Age 65, lost as much as $1.4 billion invested with Madoff. Look how he got suckered by this guy from Brooklyn. Amazing. Imagine you thinking like a French anti-Semite like him wouldn't have put money, but they all knew like, all right, these kind of guys are good with money, and they go back to Rothschild. All right, let's give him $1.4 billion. You know what he got out of it? A suicide. Hung himself in the shower curtain. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Fajardo, Te Pone a Gozar. Just playing some of my music from years ago. Just for a minute, give me a break. Talk about Bernie Madoff, Obama, and immigrants in a minute. I slashed his wrists. Ugh. All over money, you cut your wrists. Found his wrist slashed. Hear this? Hear this story? Wait, let me just hear this riff, then I'll get back to business. Because everyone's off tomorrow. They're cooking a goose, a turkey. I like to see Madoff's goose cook. Put him in the pot. That rat son of a gun. Smirking at everyone, you son of a gun. When you get to your people, it'll take centuries to overcome the anti-Semitism that you're going to unleash Madoff. You bum, you piece of garbage. Smirking at everyone like you got everyone beat, you piece. Sorry, I just drifting off. You hear what I mean, the bird? That's what Fajardo said to me. He listens to the birds. Maybe he was telling me the truth. Why not? Why not get your inspiration from nature? I've heard birds sound like this. He would climb the scales on that flute. I would want to cry. I feel like jumping up and reaching and jumping onto a cloud. How could anyone do that, I asked myself. I'm stuck eating like a bad meal on a Friday night in a house in Queens. And you get in the car and you drive into the city and you hear this kind of music. You can't believe there's another world like that out there. You know what I mean? course, it can mislead you totally, too. There's a lot of people crashed out totally in their lives just following the music and the drugs. I was lucky. I had some controls in me. Centuries, ages of controls built into me. Listen to this. Whatever. I don't go to this music anymore. Maybe I should. They say that Palmieri's coming to town. Some guy, good friend of mine, wants me to go hear him. Hey, Agosar, Agosar, Michael Savage, Jose Fajardo. So the guy, I linked up a story. It's a tragedy. Hedge fund founder who lost $1.4 billion in Madoff scandal found dead in apparent suicide. It's on michaelsavage.com from Fox News. It's a heck of a story. Tragedy, yes. So here's a high-class French guy, age 65, who lost as much as $1.4 billion. They find him this morning sitting at his desk with both wrists slashed. They find a box cutter and a bottle of sleeping pills on his desk. No suicide note was found. Villachouet could not cope with the pressure following the outbreak of the scandal. The Tribune's website said, quoting his relatives, "This is a farewell from someone who had done nothing wrong." I agree. He did nothing wrong, but the SOB who... Let me stop right here. I can't say it, what I'd like to say. De La Villachouet's fund enlisted links to Europe's high society, including Prince Michel of former Yugoslavia and Philippe Junot, a French businessman who was a former husband of Princess Carolina Monaco. He lived in an affluent suburb of Westchester County with his wife. They have no children. There's no answer at the family's house. So here's a guy who did the right thing, but he couldn't live with the shame. Came from a, I figured, a long line of aristocratic Frenchmen. With the Magone part of his name referring to one of France's most powerful families. A lot of good it does you. Well, he did what he felt had to do, I guess, as an aristocrat, which is kill himself. I wouldn't do it that way. If I lost everything, what should I do? Kill myself? I was down. I've been down. I've been up. I've been up and down. I've been a predator. I've been a pawn. You remember that song by Sinatra? You got that one? I've been a puppet, a poet, a prophet, a poet, a prawn, and a king. I know it's a pawn and a king. But you have to have been a pawn to understand what it is to be a prince. I've been everything. I mean, I've had to do a lot of things to survive. That's why I can identify.
A puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king.
In my case, it's a prawn and a king. I've been a prawn, not a king.
And I know one
thing. This is not a good rendition. I've said you before. You got to download another free one. Oh, it's terrible. But anyway, you know what I'm saying. What would you do if you lost everything? How would you start over? What if you woke up and you're ripped off by this SOB made off of someone like him and you had nothing? Let's say the day before you, and the next day you don't know what to do with yourself. You know, there was a guy here in Marin County, I won't mention his name. I'm talking a long time ago. He was a mortgage broker, and he swindled whatever. He got caught, lost everything. He went to San Quentin. I had him on the show when I was a local talk show host. I won't mention his name. The guy is a real prince in that. Here's a white guy, loses everything, goes to San Quentin, and he survives. And he called my show. And if he's listening, he's entitled to let you call again, please. I said to him, how did you survive San Quentin? Middle-aged white guy who was once a rich man. He said, well, Michael, he says, what you do is you barter what tools you have. I said, well, what tools did you have? He said, I had knowledge. I was literate. And I became the guy who could go to the law books for the baddest guys in the prison. They protected me. I said, amazing. And he did. He was unscathed so far as I know. He came out, did his time, came out and opened a little store. Guess what? To me, he's a gentleman. He's a prince. To have lost everything, go to San Quentin, come out and have the guts to open a little store and thrive in a little store and come back into the community, to me, the man is a star. That's what you have to do. What could you do? What could you do if you lose everything? I mean, I don't know. I do what I have to do. That's all. You're going to die. You're not going to kill myself over money. What are the reasons to kill yourself? Answer, none. None. It's the biggest infamata you could commit if you're an Italian. If you're a Jew, you can't do it. If you're a Muslim, you can't do it. Anyone else, you can do it. Go ahead. Go with my blessing. Because the Bible says that it's the gravest sin you could commit. It's committing homicide against yourself, and it's not your property. You are God's property. That's the brilliance of the religion. So it prevents suicide in religious people, as it should. That's why the atheists are into euthanasia and suicide and all of the other horrible, horrible things that human beings can do on the earth. Because they don't believe in God. They don't believe in themselves. In order to believe in yourself, you have to believe in God. If you can't believe in God, you can't believe in yourself. You're lying to yourself. That's why you became a drug addict and a degenerate and went to work in Hollywood with the other atheists. Don't you get it?
set.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. It's the holiday special. Because most radio stations are going to Christmas music already. Some of them are already there. But I'm going to be on another big hour here on the Savage Nation. I want to make the most of it. So, I mean, I could talk about Obama and Blagojevich and the suicide of one of the Madoff guy, you know. And I will. But is this Aragon? It's Aragon. So I'm talking about music that I loved as a teenager that I haven't really listened to for years, but it makes me happy to listen to it. Maybe it doesn't make you happy. All right, turn it off. They don't want to hear it. They marry the cracker can't. They can't take that Latin music. But that was a different kind of Latin music in those days. It wasn't like the squeaky German-Mexican music. That always intrigues me how you say Latin music. What does that really mean? I mean Cuban as opposed to Jamaican, as opposed to the Panamanian music is amazing, but something happened, and I don't mean to be derogatory, something happened with Mexican music. It sounds like German military music gone bad. I don't get that part of it. We all had crying and screaming like that. I don't understand that part of it. Why? What is that? How'd that come up out of there? Why didn't the Cubans do that or the Panamanians or whatever? Well, I guess it's regional down there, different kind of agave, I guess, different tequila does different things to people, but. So here we are, 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com, plenty of news. There is news. There's plenty of news. I don't know what it is that you want to, the Pope is a big story, but you don't want to talk about that. You don't want to talk about the fact that the Pope actually believes what the Bible says. I mean, gays are shocked that he says homosexual behavior is destructive. What do you want the Pope to say? That's why he's the Pope. Pope Benedict said Monday that saving humanity from homosexual or transsexual behavior was just as important as saving the rainforest from destruction. Listen to what the Pope said. The church should also protect man from the destruction of himself. A sort of ecology of man is needed, the pontiff said in a holiday address to the Curia. Pope went on, he said, the tropical forests do deserve our protection, but man as a creature does not deserve any less. Then he says, the Catholic Church teaches that while homosexuality is not sinful, homosexual acts are. That's interesting. It opposes gay marriage, and in October, a leading Vatican official called homosexuality, quote, a deviation and irregularity, a wound, close quote. The Pope said humanity needed to listen to the language of creation to understand the intended roles of man and woman. He compared behavior beyond traditional heterosexual relations as, quote, a destruction of God's work, close quote. The Pope also defended the church's right to speak of human nature as man and woman and asked that this order of creation be respected. Good for him. What do you want to rewrite now? Rewrite the Bible and tell a Pope what to say? Answer, yes. See, that's why I respect religious figures who have the guts to speak out. 7 out of 10 blacks in California agree with the Pope. 9 out of 10 Chinese agree with the Pope. But don't tell that to Jerry Brown, the Attorney General. Don't tell that to the whack job mayor that we have. They think they're going to rewrite the history of the human species, all because they get money from the homosexual lobby. And that's all I want to say on it. You know what I'm saying? Believe what you want to believe, and that's the end of it. I don't care what one way or the other what you do. The people voted. They said no to homosexual marriage. And any damn politician who says to go to hell to the people should be put in jail. Never mind that they shouldn't be voted for. They should be slapped in handcuffs. They're worse than Blagojevich. An attorney general who says, I'm not going to uphold the law, I'm going to overturn the law, is a criminal. He's a criminal as sure as Blagojevich was accused of criminality. He has taken the people's faith and he has destroyed it. That's how most people see it, incidentally. Don't blame me for telling you what's true. Just recognize there is a truth. A politician whose job it is to uphold the law of the land and says, I'm not going to uphold the law of the land because I get money from a certain special interest group, is a criminal as far as I can tell. But I'm not going to go there. I'm going back to Latin music. So I would like you to play Dizzy Gillespie, A Night in Tunisia, and I'm going to do a reverie now about jaguars and snow. Go ahead. That was the downbeat. Boom. Missed it. Okay. Now we're going to get back there. That's a potent song. God. Now, that evokes a whole feeling that you can't describe in words. That's why it was called A Night in Tunisia. Okay, stop already. They got it. They can't hear the two tracks. I told you the average listener to talk radio can hear one track. They can't multi-track. They can single track only. But you say A Night in Tunisia. Now, some people got so swept up in the music between the marijuana and the music that their life went off the rails. They thought they could go down that road and stay on the other track of a career and success. Very few could do it. Some could. But very few could. Most people went off the rails. They actually went to Tunisia. They started doing smack and they died. Or they started doing smack and they came back and went to work in the Marin County Department of Social Services. Whatever. In either case, their life was over. Or worse yet, they became a supervisor in San Francisco. Other people didn't know how to combine the two. So they did one or the other. They became a doctor or a lawyer or a stockbroker. And they went on like Bernie Madoff. How does that guy live with himself? I'd like to know. A man who destroyed so many lives. How does he live with himself? Him and Ruth. They destroy so many lives. They turn people against Jews for hundreds of years. I mean, I got to lay it on the line. No one's saying this. But, you know, it's one thing Jewish people fear is people who don't like Jewish people. I got to lay it on. Let me lay it on. Since holiday, I'm going to open it up. A lot of people who love the show are Christians who happen to be the nicest people on the planet. The greatest supporters of Israel don't happen to be Jews. They happen to be Christians. That's the funniest part. If you add it up, the greatest number of people who support Israel happen to be fundamentalist Christians, in terms of numbers, far greater than the number of Jews who support Israel. The secular Jews hate Israel. The secular Jews hate themselves, and they hate Israel, and they hate the Bible. That's the funny part of it all. So the fact of the matter is, I'm going to tell you what's really going on here. Anti-Semitism, although it was around for many centuries, was more or less put into the closet. After the Holocaust, even the most bigoted anti-Semite said, you know what, I got to be careful with my words. Look what it led to. I don't want anything to do with it. Then slowly started to creep back as Israel came along and the propaganda came from the left and their Palestinian fellow travelers. And more leftists started to, you know, like Jimmy Carter came along and they started to espouse anti-Israel sentiment. And they said, I'm not anti-Semitic, I'm anti-Zionist. Even Martin Luther King Jr. said, and I'm going to quote him now. It's paraphrased. Martin Luther King Jr., who's a straight-up guy, said, make no mistake about it, there's no such thing as an anti-Zionist, they're anti-Semites. Martin Luther King Jr. said that. Put that into your pipe and smoke it with your crack. But you see, we've come a long way since Martin Luther King Jr., haven't we? So anti-Semitism started to bubble up again through the internet, this and that, but it was subdued. Subdued. The same old jokes about Jews and money and Jews and blah, blah, blah. And everyone knew it, it was okay. What the heck, it's mild. Now you get a guy like Madoff, and the word Jewish and money, this and money and Jew, it's back. And it's a flood. And no one's going to talk about it. Now, the usual suspects are out there saying anti-Semitism is flooding the internet, the ADL. Well, of course it's flooding the internet. I'm not justifying it, but what do you want people to say, the lower thinkers? What do you want them to say? Madoff wasn't Jewish? The only saving grace here is that most of the people he robbed were Jewish and Jewish tragedies, but not exclusively. That doesn't justify it, but most of the victims were Jewish. Thank God he didn't rob the Catholic Church. So all I can say is thank God the Catholic Church didn't give Madoff their money. That's the one thing I can say. Thank God that, you know, that didn't happen. But a guy like Madoff has now set the Jewish people back hundreds of years. It's going to take a sociologist to write what I just said in a more, let us say, philosophical manner. But make no mistake about it, this is a major league topic for an academic, which is the damage that Madoff has done to the Jewish people per se. Do you know that certain people can destroy an entire people? And you look at other races or other ethnic groups and what individuals have done to their reputation and name. And I don't have to go down the list. You know what the average hardworking Italian feels about the Sopranos. They hate it because it turns every Italian into a gangster. But, okay, they had to live with that. They didn't like it. They resented it. Or you can go into the world of the African-American. You think they like to see rap stars? You think that the average educated African-American identifies with a rap star? They consider them the lowest trash. They can't stand them. They don't look up to them. And so every ethnic group has to live with people within their ethnicity who give them a bad name. Right now, that has happened for the Jewish people with Bernie Madoff. I'll be right back. Savage.
Siempre en su casa presente está el bodeguero y el cha-cha-cha. Vete a la esquina y lo verás.
So one of the Ten Commandments says, thou shalt not steal. And then we got the Bernie Madoff case. Okay, that's not stealing? Unbelievable. I want to read you something in Exodus. I won't read you the whole thing. We're talking about the golden idol or the golden calf, what happens. Aaron, one of the biblical characters, brings up a golden rings and he melts them down. He tells the women to remove the gold earrings. And he fashions it with a graving tool that makes it into a molten calf. And they say, this is thy God, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt, meaning the golden calf. And when Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made proclamation and said, tomorrow shall be a feast to the Lord. And they rose up early on the morning and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and to drink and rose up to make merry. And the Lord says to Moses, go, get thee down, for thy people that thou broughtest up out of the land of Egypt have dealt corruptly. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made them a molten calf and have worshipped it and have sacrificed unto it and said, this is thy God, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. So God's angry. And the Lord said unto Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. Now, therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may wax hot against them and that I may consume them, and I will make of thee a great nation. So God gets angry, and Moses besought the Lord his God and said, Lord, why doth thy wrath wax hot against thy people that thou hast brought forth out of the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? Wherefore should the Egyptians speak, saying, for evil did he bring them forth, to slay them in the mountains and to consume them from the face of the earth? Turn from thy fierce wrath and repent of this evil against thy people. And he goes on, and Moses turned and goes from the mountain, and with the two tables of the testimony in his hand, that's the tablets, the Ten Commandments, tables that were written on both their sides, on the one side and on the other that were they written. And the tables were the work of God, and the writing was the writing of God given upon them. Well, I won't go on, but read Exodus to yourself. And God is angry because they made a golden idol. They worshiped the golden calf. And on that note, we come back to current events. You could also say that those who worship money, or those of us who still do worship money, are worshiping a golden calf. And maybe in the interim, we benefit, we profit from the golden calf. But maybe at the end of the day, God sent the message through Madoff that you can't worship the golden calf forever and without ramifications. You got to draw from it whatever you want. But the fact of the matter is, we in America are living through a Bernie Madoff-like Ponzi scheme. If you're telling me printing dollars on a printing press to pay off debts and trebling the national debt in 3 or 4 months is not the equivalent of a Ponzi scheme, I'd like to know what is. The difference is that Madoff didn't have a military. He didn't have an Air Force and a Navy to defend them at the end of the day. We do. So although I fear we'll have a collapse in the currency at some point, which I fear, I'm not looking forward to it, at the end of the day, I know that we have the largest military on earth and we'll take what we need because we'll have to. And you say, that's terrible? No, it's not terrible. It's better us than them. And I'm going to leave it at that. And I'm serious in what I just said to you. At the end of the day, when everything collapses, the countries with the largest militaries are going to be predominant, as they probably are right now. So let's go to the callers. 1-800-449-8255. We have very good callers out there. San Diego Tim, on which topic do you call the Savage Nation tonight?
Mike, I wanted to call about Cuban music, but first I'd like to wish you a merry Christmas Kwanzaa.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm looking forward to celebrating Kwanzaa. It begins in a few nights.
Good. I hope you got your candles, Mike.
Yeah, I have my candles and my incense. Yeah. So what else is on your mind?
No, I was thinking that the reason that Cuban music is set apart from other so-called Latin forms of music from Central America and the Caribbean is because of the African influence and the rhythmic, polyrhythmic influence from
yeah, it was known as Afro-Cuban music, absolutely.
Yeah,
in fact, the best conga drummers were of African descent in the Cuban bands. They always have been, Mongo Santa Maria and others.
Absolutely, and that awful kind of polka Mexican music. I don't understand it. It's where did
yeah, that's what I'm trying to understand. When you say Latin music, you look at the Caribbean Latin music. It's totally different than Mexican music. I mean, Mexico is a Latin country. Why is the music? Well, it's the German influence. It was the German domination of Mexico, which led to that music, which is really crazy.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there are some folk songs that are nice, that are beautiful, that are more Hispanic, if you will. But the popular stuff that you hear as you drive by and you hear cars going.
Yeah, I don't particularly listen to Mexican music. I tried to. I don't get anything out of it. I find it very bad. I listen to Latin music that's not Mexican. I listen to, as I say, I love Cuban music. So it's not a racial thing. I think that the music is just terrible. And that's a result of this infusion of the Germanic, I think. It just didn't work. Anyway, thanks for the call. Let's go on to the callers on other topics. Corpus Christi. Margaret, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'm so happy that I can talk to you, Dr. Savage, because it's just like the best Christmas gift that I can ever have, talking to you.
Oh, but you got to do it quickly. We're almost out of time. Quick, fire away. What's your topic?
We were talking about the people when they lose everything. I just had recently I had an answer for the Supreme Court that I filed a petition there on my own.
Okay, did you lose everything?
Yes.
And how are you surviving? What are you doing in a nutshell?
What I'm doing, I have a business. I had like two businesses, and I tried.
I'm sorry, Margaret, I'm sending you a free Christmas present, psychological nudity, but I cannot, unfortunately, listen at this moment. Pardon me. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Playing kind of Latin music tonight. This is Guajira. Anyway, whatever. But I talk about suicide. Madoff investor found dead. It's not a funny story. Guy cuts his wrists. Where is Madoff? How could he live with himself? That's what I want to know. How come the guy who rips everyone off, he don't cut his wrists? But the guys who ripped off did get... What is that? Can anyone explain that to me psychologically? I don't quite understand how a man could do this to so many people and not... Let's say, whatever. And how is there a psychologist in the audience, psychiatrist, who can explain this to me? Sociopaths, I guess, don't feel shame for what they do. In fact, he enjoys it. See, I think he actually enjoys it. I saw the smirk of that SOB walking down the street with all the attention. He thought he was a movie star. He thought he was a rock star already. How could he? Whatever. San Diego, Vinny, welcome to the Savage Nation.
How you doing? This is Vinny.
Go ahead, Vinny.
He's one of the originators of the Mambo Society in New York. A lot of the dances you went to were organized by me at the Palladium.
Really? Amazing. Well, I want to thank you for giving me an awful lot of good nights.
Oh, we had a ball there. I'd never met you at that time, but we had seven clubs going all at once. So a lot
Vinny,
of
let me ask you something. Why is there not such a scene in San Francisco where there's such a large Latin community?
They've turned liberal. They're not with their music anymore. They're not with their backgrounds anymore. It's mostly.
Well, wait a minute. Isn't there a thriving Latin scene, nightclub scene in L.A.?
Yeah, but it's not so much of the, what do you call Afro-Cuban. They don't play too much of that anymore. It's more modern.
Well, so where is the Afro-Cuban played, if at all? Or is it a dead dog?
It's either in New York or mostly in Miami now.
Oh.
Miami's the big place for the Latin American stuff. The Afro-Cuban, all that kind of music is all...
So let's say I'm going to Miami next week, and I'm probably going to go. Where would I go to hear Afro-Cuban music in Miami?
Oh, Jesus, the names of the clubs, I don't know the names right off the top of my head. There's tons
of them. What are you doing in San Diego? Laying low? You retired?
Yeah, no, I'm 69 now. I'm a mortgage banker.
Oh, I want to hear that story. You didn't get touched by the Madoff, did you?
No, not at all. Not at all. A lot of people saw that coming. I saw that coming. The guy.
Let me ask you, Vinny, what do you think is the chance of a maid guy visiting Madoff?
Big time.
Oh, how's that? How's that for a quest for Santa? Nobody asked that question yet. Oh, ho, ho, what do you want? Well, how about a maid guy visiting Madoff?
Oh, my God. You know, I'm Sicilian, and my whole family's from the other side.
Right.
And I got into Latin music years ago, and the fellas are all into that, too, you know. There's a lot
they
of
are?
Money in that. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of money in that. Here's the reason. The white crowd, when they would go out to the nightclubs, they'd wreck the place, throw furniture around, break windows. You know, there's always a fight at the end of the night chasing some broad.
Yeah.
And Latin music, those people would come out, they'd get dressed in suits, they'd drink like anybody else, but to them it was a night out, they enjoyed it, they
yes.
didn't wreck anything.
Yes, 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 it was a family affair. I remember, you know, Vinny, it's funny you should mention that. It's one of the things I liked about the upscale Latin clubs. I remember once I was on a ship I was working on many years ago, it stopped in Panama, and I had never been to Panama, and I stumbled upon Panamanian music, which was very close to the Cuban. It was still Afro-Cuban, but it was Afro-Panamanian. And they were playing in an outdoor amphitheater with the sea splashing up against the seawall, breaking over the... And it was old people and infants and young people dancing the night away. And it was very, very well. The people controlled themselves very well. That was a total difference from the American nightclub scene like you just mentioned.
Totally different. You're right. Totally different. As a matter of fact, there used to be a place in New York called the Taft Hotel. And on a Friday night, it was the American crowd that would go there, and they would wreck the place. And come Saturday night, it was the Latin crowd that would go there. I'm sorry, the Latin crowd. And nothing would get broken, not even a glass.
And they were mainly Puerto Rican, correct?
Yes, mostly Puerto
yes.
Rican, and they were just wonderful people. I had a ball with them. And that's
isn't that amazing? See, this is an unknown side story to the music I've been playing tonight that I'm glad you elucidated, because I didn't know truly the differential in terms of how the crowds behave. But here I have Vinny, a man of Sicilian descent, who happened to... You ran all those clubs? You ran the Palladium, or which other ones, Vinny?
Riviera Terrace, the El Seclusion on 77 and Broadway, the Colgate Gardens in the Bronx. These were 3,000 seaters. The Colgate Gardens.
Well, what about out in Queens? Were there any such clubs out in Queens?
No, the clubs in Queens that had the Latin music had a bad crowd. Guys, you wouldn't want to hang out with.
Yeah, mainly from Jackson Heights.
You got it.
The necktie crowd. Hey, Vinny, how come we can communicate so well? We don't even know each other.
Ah, we come from the same place, guy. It's in our genes, you and me.
Isn't that something? So in I want to ask a few more questions, Vinny. I'm enjoying this a lot, and I'm having a lot of fun. I often wonder how a guy like you, who lived through that whole scene in New York, you're in a sedate mortgage business in San Diego, you know, it's still in your blood. You're still in your blood. You're not bored to death?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, New Year's, I'm going out to a Latin New Year's party here. They got a big dance in San Diego, and they're bringing in Afro-Cuban bands to play, and I've never given it up. I've loved it all my life.
Are you married?
Yes, I am. No children, though.
But I'm saying you. I only ask that not because I'm looking to date you. I'm saying you're going with your wife.
Yes, I am with the wife.
You got a good sense of humor. Anyway, you got a good sense of humor. But let's say, like, even the Italian food in San Diego, you can't tell me that you find food that you like, can you?
No, not here.
No. Now, that's a truism. Am I right about that? It's almost impossible.
Well, you're right. You can't get anything here. Maybe in Vegas you can catch a couple of restaurants, but that's about it.
Okay, now we're going to go down the list. Give me a Vegas restaurant that you like, that you approve of.
Ooh, jeez. Oh,
now,
wow.
Let's let that go. I know two of them that are really very good. One is way out on a highway towards the way past the airport. It's in the middle of nowhere. It looks like a junk bar. But the giveaway is, it says, we root for the Cleveland Indians. I said, okay, let's stop here. I found, I went in there, actually a guy took me in there. He said to me, Sinatra used to come in here for the pizza, and so did Dean Martin. I mean, it looks like a dump, but the food is really basic and really very good. So do you ever come up to San Francisco and try the food up here?
No, I've been up there twice. I didn't have to go up for business. I didn't try any of the food in Frisco. I don't know what's up there.
Okay. Now, there are a couple of good places. And by the way, the best Italian restaurants in the city, I think, are related in many ways to Sicilian cuisine. I happen to love Sicilian food because it's spicier than Northern Italian. I know a lot of people say they like the Northern Italian because it's less spicy. I happen to like the arrabbiata, you know, side of the scale.
Yes. The other.
Well, I'm going to send you a belated Christmas present. It won't arrive in time, Vinny, but I'd love you to have a copy of my autobiography, Psychological Nudity. It's certainly been a pleasure speaking with you this evening.
Thank you. You know, I've been listening to you over 10 years.
What?
Over 10 years I've been listening to you. I love your show.
And well, because we speak in the same vernacular, even though we're from different groups and walks of life. I mean, there's a certain commonality in the way I present or the way I see the world and what I say and the way you do.
Yeah, and you see it straight. I mean, you tell it like it is. You know, if anybody can't see it, they got to be blind.
Mm-hmm. Well, you must have a lot of dysfunction in San Diego with the politics down there.
God, they're crazy down here.
Well, they are crazy. They are crazy. They're insane. They took a beautiful Navy town and turned it into a psychological madhouse.
They did. I don't know. You know, half of these people ought to be in prison for what they did to the regular people out in the street. They hurt them.
Well, one of the former mayors of San Diego is now a bigwig in the Congress. She's on the Intelligence Committee. I can't imagine how we can defend ourselves with women like that on an Intelligence Committee. Can you imagine?
I don't know where they find these people. She's ruined everything. Listen, you know.
Yeah, you know what? Let's have a good night. Stay on the line. Give my guys your address, okay? We're going to send you a Psychological Nudity, Vinny. God bless you. Thanks for calling the show. Well, right now, guys, I've lost my internet server, so give me another caller before we go to break. We got a little time. Reconnect me and throw a caller my way. Anybody you think is good, I'll take them right now in the Savage Nation. Who's calling, please?
John in Lowell, Massachusetts.
Yes, John. Massachusetts, WRKO. My second favorite city in America, Boston. What's on your mind, John?
When you talk about stoic fathers, my father was ex-Marine, Korea, vice president of the Patrolman Union in the city of Cambridge, Mass. In the 10 years that I lived while he was alive, I was one of 11, Michael.
Wow.
He pushed into our head what was right and what was wrong. Things like what you didn't eat for dinner, you ate for breakfast. And if you didn't eat it for breakfast, you took it to school with you. And believe me, you ate it because he'd know if you didn't, Michael.
Well, believe me, most of my lunches were last night's dinner between two pieces of bread.
Did you ever bring beef liver to school, Michael?
No, but I can imagine that. I can imagine what the other kids said.
In the short 10 years that I had him around, it's helped me through my whole life, Michael.
What do you mean by the short 10 years? I'm not following you. He passed away when he was young?
Passed away. The last child was only 1 year old when he passed away. My mother raised us by herself, God bless her.
How old was your father?
My father was 38 years old. He had ventricular tachycardia.
What?
He had ventricular tachycardia, and he passed on. Very
that quickly. That was an instant death. He went into arrhythmia and died?
Yes, instant death in a hardware store. I actually had seen... Excuse me?
But what do you think brought it on?
Oh, Michael, he was from the old school. He was Lucky Strikes, saltines and butter. You know, there wasn't any diet.
Yeah, in other words, nothing is going to affect me. It's all my willpower, and I'm made of iron, right?
Yeah, but you know what? Part of that's passed on to us now. And nothing much does affect me anymore. I'm not a numb human being. But the way we were brought up, Michael, if there's a roof over our head and food on our table, even if it is pork and beans, life is good.
Well, wait, I want to go back to the health part of it for a minute, because I understand the stoicism with regard to money. You yourself are older than your father was when he passed, correct?
I am. I'm 44 now, yes.
And are you in good health?
I am in good, not excellent health, but I'm in good health. I'm up.
All right, but do you smoke? You don't smoke and throw caution to the wind, do you?
No, Michael.
And you know, I want to say that I want to tell you, I think the single biggest factor in those early heart attacks, particularly in that last generation, were the cigarettes. More than any other factor. Certainly there's diet, we know that, and lack of vitamins and things of that nature. There's so much that we do know. But the cigarettes changed the metabolism in so many negative ways that I'm convinced it was the tobacco more than anything else.
Well, it's tobacco, it's 11 kids, it's being the vice president of Patrolman's Union. He didn't look to relieve stress from his life. Now, what I learned at about 28 years old was, if something or someone around me caused me stress, I removed myself from that person or that situation.
Yeah, well, I'm doing that more and more now in my years right now. I try to avoid situations that make me agitated. I can't take it. I don't want to deal with it.
It's priceless, Michael. I have a smile on my face. When people ask, how am I doing? I say, I'm still on this side of the dirt.
That's beautiful. So how many kids do you have?
None, Michael. I remove stress from my life. I have.
Oh, there you learned from your father. You went the other way. The Pope's not going to bless you, you know.
I have 21 nieces and nephews I can go pick up. And I'll tell you, Michael, you know, you want to know something fun? Last year for Christmas, you know what we did? We made bows and arrows out of sticks, Michael. And I don't mean anything fancy. And I guarantee you those are the ones toys that did not collect dust the week after Christmas.
Oh, no. Kids love bows and arrows. Well, I'm sending you a Christmas present. It may get there by 2009, but no, it'll be there within a week. Psychological Nudity goes out to Boston, Massachusetts. Stay on the line, John. Beautiful call. Great call. Still time left. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Pero mira cómo dice la cinturita. Caballero, mira cómo vengo y traigo sabrosa la cinturita. Yo fui hasta Francia por la cinturita. Enamoro a mi chamaca con la cinturita. Y me busco la comida también con la cinturita. Caballero, mira qué sabroso bailo.
This man, Benny Moré, is considered one of the greatest Cuban singers of all time. Just from the point of view of music, that's all. Interesting story, Benny Moré. M-O-R-E, Benny Moré, died in 1963. Just listen to a voice for a minute, then I'll give you a story.
¿Cómo dijiste? Arriba la pasa.
These are the guys who learned music basically on their own. They didn't go to a Juilliard. They didn't grow up with a teacher in their crib. His maternal great-great-grandfather, it is said, was the son of the king of a tribe in the Congo, who was captured by slave traders and sold to a Cuban plantation owner. Now, the guy goes to Cuba as a slave, and he's later liberated and dies as a free man at age 64, and his great-great-grandson is Benny Moré. Makes an instrument at age 6. He made his first instrument, a guitar, out of a board and a ball of string. Compare that to the spoiled American. You see, you don't have to. Turn it off for a minute. What I'm getting at is there's a lot of nobility in poverty if you know how to deal with it. Now, I'm not saying that poverty is ennobling. Don't get me wrong. That's a common myth. As I said to you, I have found people of wealth to be much nicer generally than people who are poor. There's no question that poverty crushes people. It doesn't liberate them. But it's not also true in reverse that if you are born poor, you're necessarily going to die poor, or you're never going to make anything of yourself. I'm a true believer that if a person has something great within them or some great talent, it's going to come out no matter what the level of income may be or no matter who the parents may be. That I've always believed that, and I still believe it. On the other hand, I mean, you can cultivate it, certainly. I don't know what this man might have been if instead of making an instrument at age 6, out of a board and a ball of string, he had been discovered and sent to Juilliard. God knows who he could have been. He certainly could have been better than he was. He certainly could have been greater than he was as Benny Moré, you know what I'm saying, in Cuba. But anyway, that was the point of the story, is that there's great music, and it can come from anybody at any time, from any place. And in any other sphere of performance or of endeavor, greatness can come up out of the swamp. There's a saying from the Buddhist tractates that says, from the muck a lotus will grow. From the muck a lotus grows. What does that mean? What is the meaning of that saying? from the muck a lotus grows. That it doesn't matter how poor you may be. It doesn't matter what muck you may find yourself in. You could be poor right now with nothing. Somewhere within that muck, that swamp that you are in, there's a great lotus that can grow. That's the meaning of that religious statement. And it's true no matter what your religion may be. Whether you are Jewish, the Passover story. What is the Passover story? The Passover story is the temple is invaded and destroyed. The Jews go back into the holiest of holy, and they think that it is destroyed. And they find in the remnants, in the rubble rather, some holy oil. And although the holy oil is supposed to burn only for one night, it burns for 8 nights. What does that tell you? It tells you that even if you are a wreckage right now as a human being, within you there's some holiness, there's a spark. What is the Christian story? The same thing. Within you there's always an ember glowing, a spark. As long as you're alive, there's hope. And if you can find that ember within yourself and blow some oxygen on it, that ember can become a flame, the flame can become a fire, and it can lead you back out of the darkness. It's true in every religion. And there's hope and there's truth in these times. These are the greatest times of the year, of course, with all of the confluence of all of the religions coming together in these dark days, these short days and long nights. You can find religion in the darkness. That's where you usually find it. Rarely does a person look for religion in the sunshine of their lives or in the sunniest of their days. When do they turn to religion? In the darkest of days, in the darkest of nights. And many of you are, I know that. I mean, I'm not here to pull on your heartstrings, but many people right now are feeling very, very grave darkness, not only from the economic times, but for these troubling political times. And I want to tell you, we are going to go into some very, very dark political times. There is no question in my mind that we have only seen the beginning of what's coming. And we have to stay strong. And just remember your ancestors. What they went through in the past, what you're going through is nothing compared to what they went through. And if they could live through it, you can live through it. That's all I can say. And with God's will, I will be here for you as long as God wants me to be, period. It's not up to anybody else. It's not up to the radio industry or to anybody else. It's up to God. That's who gave me what I have today, because my standing before you today is a miracle. And my standing before you tomorrow will continue to be a miracle. God bless you and God bless America.